Number 12B.
Yes. Then, once he has established really the sense that instead of the material calculus, Mr. Zeti speaks about that material calculus in the textbook, and we begin to see that the calculus is only a calculus of spirit, then it has a universal attraction. So we come to the next point of the Christ subtone, where I have written something that is wrong, and I ask you to correct it. I have printed there, by accepting the Christ, the divine identity works, that in proofreading I made a mistake, I didn't see that. You know, proofreading is something by itself. It's very difficult. So it should really read, by accepting the Christ, the divine calculus, instead of identity. The divine calculus works, and you should add, in us. So I repeat, the epitome should read, by accepting the Christ, the divine calculus works in us. Yes. Okay? And I go on. Now, let's see the flow, the spiritual logic of the flow in it. I start out with the subtone of the word, which says we have to do really with a spiritual calculus, which resolves the material calculus. If I have that spiritual calculus, which is the universal calculus, then that has as its effect, really, that it weds itself to the Christ and says to each one, because the Christ comes to each one and says, I want also to have that spiritual calculus. Just as Jesus had it, I want to have it too. It's at that point where people came to him and said, well, what you do, we want to do too. How do you do these things so that we too can do these things? It's naturally a question that each one of us has had within himself also, that we were reading the Bible and were hearing about the works of Jesus, and then we felt, well, is this just a one historical incident, a one historical man that did it, and that's the end of it? Or is he just exemplifying a spiritual calculus that is available to each one, not only to Jesus? And Jesus naturally said, yes, it's available to everybody under certain conditions. That's always the point, under certain conditions. It's available to each one. And so he said, yes, you can do the works that I do, you can do too. And so gives us the sense, that the universal sense, that the Christ works as a calculus universally in each one of us. And then we identify ourselves with that Christ calculus, that it is working within us, that we can do the works that he has been doing. He shows that in four steps, which we are not going to take right now, so as not to deviate from our main line, but you will see that there are certain demands that have to be fulfilled. And one of the main demands is then coming up right afterwards in Christianity. The next epitome reads, this demands laying down the mortal belief. So it shows here Christianity, says Christianity at the point. See, why is it Christianity? Because it asks something of us. So then the focal point is on man, of what we have to do. So he says, you can only have that Christ calculus within you and see that it works within you, and that it works, the same works as I do, under the condition that in Christianity you lay down your mortal beliefs. because mortal beliefs have no place in that calculus. The mortal calculus has no place in the divine calculus. And that is a very tricky thing, to lay down the mortal beliefs. There is a point where we usually don't make the grade. That's one of the most difficult things, I think, in Christian Science, to lay down the personal sense of things, to lay down the mortal sense of things, because innate in us is the belief that really God should really improve our material state of things. And not the other way around, that God demands of us to lay down the mortal sense of things. And that's a great difference. And I will come back to it at a certain point in our discussion. But here, first, to see the demands that are asked for. So we see, and it is at that point where many of his disciples or of his followers said, this is a hard saying, and did no more follow him, and went back, each one, as it was said, to his own house, to his own hobby thinking. He goes back right to that thinking which he likes, and does not like to let down his way of thinking, his old way of thinking, for a completely new way of consciousness, namely that takes not in any of the material, personal, corporeal consciousness. So this is the crux where most students then stumble and fall on their nose, and because they say, I rather like to go back to my own home. There I feel at home, there I know what I'm doing, there I'm really cozy at home, and don't feel the impact of spiritualizing my consciousness. Then it goes on and says, therefore, if you go home to your own home, you will have no more a principle. Then you are no more going out from the one principle. Then you are no more going out to think or speak or write from the divine principle. Then you have left that divine principle. And so he gives us, from the point of view of science, quite a nice description that we should only go out from principle, interpret the universe from principle, that we teach from principle and not from ideas. Because that would be metaphysics. Metaphysics is not science. So, you know, it's that point where they said, how does this man know the scripture, having never learned the scripture? Because Jesus never, apparently, we don't know exactly, never was in a theological school, never was taught by the scribes and so on. We actually don't know where he was. But he really said at that point that he knows the Father, and what the Father tells him, that's the right teaching. So only working out and also knowing from principle and teaching from principle. He even shows there, we'll come back to it in more detail later on, he even shows there in the Greek that then, if he goes out from principle, then out of his matrix will flow life eternal. He uses the term, the Greek uses the term matrix, out of his matrix, so that he can see already what we teach today so much, that we can see every proposition, right proposition, as a matrix of reality. Just as we have here various matrices, where in order to explain just one point. So at that time already, John was foreseeing really the era of science that will come, and see that we cannot be happy or satisfied with statements, with atomistic statements. that in order to explain a point, really an important point, we really should explain it through a whole matrix, or at least through the four, but even better through the 4x4. So Mrs. Eddy did that. She explained her revelation of Christian Science not only through the four, but through the 4x4 through 16 chapters. That is her teaching. So we can see how John was foreseeing what is coming, that he always somehow had a vision of the future, that he had a vision that divine signs would come, that the new paraclete would come, that that new paraclete would teach us all things and would teach us the truth. That paraclete, he says, is not going to give you life eternal. He's going to give you the truth. He's going to show you science. He's going to show you the whole matrix of being. Isn't it enormous what he already saw? And isn't it enormous that if we read really that text, not as texts and not as nice words, but see what they imply scientifically, that we are quite at home with it and say and find, well, actually, this is a gospel that could have been written today. When we translate those terms into our in the terminology of today, we feel right at home with the model of being and with the matrices of being. Then he goes further. So that was the question of the Christ. Then he goes further and comes to the third part of Christianity, that long part, it is the longest part in the Gospel, a wonderful description. And we have there Christianity from the point of view of love and mind, from the point of view that God, love, only can see good, that divine love only sees everything as idea. And never anything as error, never can see evil. God's eyes are too pure to behold evil. And so we have to explain this statement. And he explained that statement from the point of view of truth and then of love. Let's take first truth. It's a very simple one. From the point of view of truth, we have the underlined epitome that truth resolves the belief in mortal manhood. Now, we are at the point of Christianity, which is at the focal point of man, of manhood. So now we are considering what is man, what is a true man, what is a wrong man, what is true manhood, what is mortal manhood. And from the point of view of truth, see the truth and not the erroneous concept of manhood. Is that clear about truth? That truth always has that office of showing what is the truth against the belief of error. So here he takes up really mortal manhood, and we know mortal manhood can be reduced, so to say, to four distinct aspects, namely that mortal manhood is sinning, that mortal manhood can become sick, third, that mortal manhood can die, and then the biggest one of all of them, that mortal manhood is a stinker. That personal sense is really that which is the thing we don't like to give up. We like perhaps to give up sin, that's a question, but we all like to give up sickness, and we all would like to give up death, but not personal sense, which John was calling the prince of this world, see, of this world. And we have seen that world means not to go out from principle. World means to go out from the opposite of God, the opposite of principle, to go out from personal thinking, what we think, what we believe in, what our opinions is, what our desires are, our. It's always going out from personal sense. And to drop personal sins is very, very difficult for each one of us. For each one of us. Because this is an inherited belief in thousands and thousands of years. Since the chimpanzees, we believe that we are a person and therefore have a personal sense. So it isn't an easy thing to give up personal sense. Though, mentally or intellectually, it's very easy. It's just so very easy. It says, well, people are not the creator. The only creator is God. So let's go out from God. And let's only know what God knows, and let's only see what God sees, and let's only think about things as God thinks about it. It would be very easy intellectually. But we know that the prince of the world is within us and is quite a stinker. He comes up and pops up from morning to night. And we just are overwhelmed constantly by that prince of the world. And so he brings up a very big proposition. Again, let's go through the flow of these four undertones and see what means the resolving really of mortal manhood. We know that Mrs. Eddy says that man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. That's a big statement. We are thinking that man is capable of sin, sickness, and death. But only because our terminology is not good, is not right. Only mortal man is able of sin, sickness, and death, and of personal sins. But the true man, the man that is God's idea, that is principle's idea, is absolutely free from sin, sickness, and death. He's unable even to sin. He's unable to get sick. He's unable to die. An idea cannot sin. An idea cannot get sick. An idea cannot die. An idea is always impersonal. So we have this great subject that is necessary in order to see, because these are the subjects that bother our daily life. These four false concepts. They are there, they are the little foxes that come in all the time and try to make our life miserable. So this is a big thing to handle, and we will see how John is handling it. But he is not handling it in the way that he fights sin, sickness, and death. Not at all. He shows really that man is incapable of sin, sickness, and death. Or as Mrs. Eddy said, man can neither sin, suffer, be subject to matter, nor disobey the law of God. Not even that, you see, does away with the personal sin. You have read all these statements many, many times. Have we stuck to it? See, this is always the point, that science is so easy, but our human sense does not want to accept it, and therefore science becomes so difficult for us. But science itself is very easy. Just at this very point where we see that this triad of error constantly is giving us trouble, but that is not really what is happening in the realm of reality. Not at all. So it's a question, are we wanting to go on in the reality, in the unreality, or are we want to go on in reality? So the decision is on us. So instead of that he sees that he has to fight sin, sickness, and death, in every time he does not fight against it. Just the contrary, he traces sin back to nothingness. He traces sin back, the sinful, the adulterous woman, that whole sense right back to the dust, to nothingness, and says, well, thy sins are forgiven. Just don't sin anymore. In the healing, he said, I'm not going to heal you. That's not my problem, to heal you. I'm going to show, really, what he says, that God should be glorified and made manifest in him. Can you see the completely different attitude? He had that blind man in front of him, blind from birth, and he didn't say to him, I'm going to heal you. He said, I'm going to manifest the glory of God. That's what I'm going to do. He didn't really resurrect Jesus from the grave. He said, no, that's not my business to do. I go to Lazarus that the Son of God might be glorified. Can you see the difference in consciousness? Naturally, it had the effect that it resurrected Jesus. But his attitude, his consciousness, was not that he's going to resurrect Jesus. If he would have tried to do that, he wouldn't have been successful. He couldn't have resurrected Jesus, because he would have gone out from the proposition that actually Lazarus was living in a body and died in a body, and therefore he had to be resurrected in the body. His preposition there would have been wrong. If we go out, well, we come back to it when we go through it again, he would have shown that his bases were wrong, that we cannot resurrect somebody if we believe that he lived in a body or died in a body. And in the same way, Mrs. Eddy would show, we cannot heal somebody if we believe that he lives in a body, that he got sick in a body, that this body got sick, and therefore it has to be healed. He didn't do that. He said, no, I'm going to see that the Son of God is manifested in him. Isn't that a different proposition? Quite different. So he dealt with sin, sickness, and death not by accepting that the woman was sinning, not by accepting that the blind was blind, not by accepting that Lazarus had died and was lying in the tomb until after 4 days he stank. He didn't do that. So you can see the quite different attitude John takes, which we find again in the textbook. As I just said, with a few reference from it, that we have to come to the point where we see in healing that we don't have to heal. We can't heal man. He's complete. We can't heal man. Man is the idea of God and is always perfect. So if we feel that we have to heal a man, it's a hell of a job, because it can't be done, really. We can only have a healing when we see that the man is not sick. That man from eternity to eternity is the idea of God and is always expressing the perfection of God and the perfection of the idea man and nothing else. So this is quite a big thing here. Huh? So if we go again quickly through it, it's so easy, this point of truth, that truth resolves the belief in mortal manhood. Doesn't say that truth heals sin, heals sickness, heals death, because that would only show the effect of a true consciousness, which is that truth does not know sin, that truth does not know sickness, that truth does not know death, that truth does not know a person universe, a people universe, that it only knows an idea universe. And that's the truth about the belief. And that then is called healing. But we must be very clear, and I will come back to it over and over this week. We must be aware that our basis is right in regard to dealing with error. That the basis must be right, that the basis must be in the realm of truth, and must never leave the realm of truth in our deduction, that we never go outside that realm of truth. Only then do we really use divine laws. A divine law is only a law that operates within the realm of divinity. And that's the point. But we'll come back to it. I just first always bring up the question and make aware of the question that has to be thought about a bit more deeply. And then afterwards, we can go over it again and see it in more detail. Okay, we go on this afternoon, 3:30.